Hello. It's our first time outside of England. It's good to be here. So, no, I'm just playing with it. I fidget with things. Thanks anyway, though. I'm good. Thanks. It always takes me a couple minutes of playing with microphones before I can get to anything. It's very nice to see you guys here. It's really nice to be in Scotland. One of my favorite hobbies when I was in Guantanamo Bay was coming up with analogies for the camp, like coming up with different ways to describe it in a way that would help it make sense. And my favorite one, and the one that seemed most apt, was from Dante's Inferno in regards to Guantanamo Bay being like hell. And it was pretty true to the whole thing. Sallyport 1, the first gate you have to go through, is a lot like Cerberus. And then there are 7 levels of hell with different levels of tortured souls stuck in this perpetual, endless game, suffering for, I guess, just insanity's sake. And in the confines of this, or the parameters of this analogy, it was kind of necessary to accept that I was playing the role of a demon. And that's technically what I was doing. Well, not technically, but that's how I saw things. But I'll backtrack a little bit. I guess you're probably wondering how I got into the military. And I know I look a little young. I spent 6 years in the National Guard. I joined when I was 17. I was a senior in high school. My family had been split up, and I needed college money. And in America, they come to the poor people, and they say, if you join the military, you'll have a job, and you'll have health insurance and housing, and they'll pay for your college. And all these things are attractive to kids who are watching their families lose their jobs after years of work without any real hope of getting out of the circumstances we were born into. No hope of going to college. So I joined, and then I was kind of forced to deal with that decision when we were mobilized to Guantanamo Bay. That whole period passed by like a blur. I was told a month before we left, I wrapped things up, I said goodbye to all my friends and family and took off. And we went to Fort Dix, New Jersey, where we went through a mobilization process. And for 1 month, I was rushed through an SRP, Soldier Readiness Program, where I was filled with a bunch of shots, all different kinds of whatever they wanted to stick in me. I signed my name on a billion different pieces of paper. I spent all day waiting in line, going to the psychologist's office and trying to tell them that I was too sane I was crazy in the sense that I couldn't do this job, which made me sane in the real world, but in the military sense, insane. And that didn't fly. And I just wrapped up that whole period of time just kind of amazed at how surreal everything was turning, because I'd only joined for college money, and things were getting really serious. We had five days of training to actually work the blocks. We spent some of them in a chicken wire construct, shackling each other up in the snow. There wasn't any snow in Guantanamo. And we stabbed each other with rubber knives because the detainees were renowned toilet paper knife makers. And we made racist jokes, and we drank a lot of beer, and we hung out, and we talked about how we were going to get through this. And then we went to Guantanamo. With 5 days is not adequate, an adequate amount of time to get anybody ready for this. We were not in any way, shape, or form prepared for what we were headed into. So we all learned as we went. And when I say we, I'm referring to mostly in the age group of 18 to 25-year-old platoon. We were part of a platoon-sized element that had gotten pulled apart and sent to different units. So they took our platoon, and they separated us up by guns, and they sent us to different units. So we were completely alienated, away from even the people we'd come there with, except for one or two, four or five people per section that we might know from the unit we come from, and just thrown into the blocks. And we learned how to deal with that while we were there. And once again, this is a bunch of kids. Most of the people in the military are people that signed for the same reasons I did and got stuck in the military just for college money or for economic benefits, and they got stuck in situations that they didn't want to be in. And that's a large population of people, and there weren't that many people that had been in for longer, so a very young group of people running the most top secret detention facility in the entire nation, globe, right now. And we had a number of rhetorical devices on our side to make sure that we could do this job, because one of the difficulties in sending a bunch of people down to a position like this is that you really can't think about the people that you're working around like human beings to do what they're asking you to do. It makes it really difficult to see people. I mean, if you're a human being and you're alive and you're walking up and down these blocks all day and you're looking inside the cells and you see the people inside the cells as human beings, this has an obvious impact on anyone that has empathy / is not a psychopath. And I guess that was always my biggest problem, because I couldn't really get over the fact that these were human beings in the cells. And we were told they were terrorists, and we were told they were the worst of the worst, and that they'd kill us with toilet paper knives if they could, and they'd probably kill our whole families. I just didn't believe it. I ended up talking to quite a few of them, and having some really good conversation for the most part, because mostly everybody I deployed with was pretty stupid. And I mean, I like books, I like reading, I like talking, and I enjoy these things, and the people in my unit were not necessarily totally geared for that. So we used a number of these rhetorical devices. Not only, and it wasn't just the military ones, but to just deal with the military ones, we had to call them detainees. That was like the first and foremost number one deal of Guantanamo Bay, and this is why the whole thing works like it does. It really is this totally shallow. If you call them anything else, they get rights, and that's it. It's that simple. So we can't call them prisoners, even though they look like prisoners. That walks like a duck, talks like a duck. Can't call them a prisoner though, because they're detainees. Because we have to call them that to make sure that they don't get any rights. And it's a detention facility, not a concentration camp. I was corrected several times by my leadership and peers for calling it that. And these things are really important. This is what people's lives are hinging on. They're sitting around without trials because we call them detainees. One switch of a word. That's why people are frustrated that people have been so quiet here, because it seems so easy when you're there to make sense of how it doesn't make sense at all, because it's ridiculous. It's totally silly. The whole thing. Not silly, horrifying. I mean, it's just obnoxious. I'm going to try to get to some things that people ask questions about later now. Torture. Did I see it? Yes. But I think that most people that I've talked to about the subject of torture are thinking about it wrong. If you are looking to me to tell you that we waterboarded or that we electrocuted or that we did any of these things as torture, no, that doesn't happen. There's a list. It's a very subtle list, and it probably wouldn't surprise you. And that's why it's super insidious, because the government knows that it's not going to surprise you. They are relying on your apathy. But just as a reminder, I'd like to bring forward that the whole thing is torture. The whole camp, everything about the camp, down to the issuing of toothbrushes, is an entire psychological process in torture. Just having somebody there, separated from the legal system, separated from their families, and separated from everything they know, is torture. So when you ask people whether or not they saw torture, you're kind of exposing that you haven't really thought about it enough to know and to acknowledge that this entire thing is a torturous process to the human soul. I mean, torture is essentially... torture is essentially the usage of any kind of psychological or physical implement or pain or distress to gather information. And that's what Guantanamo is all about. It doesn't all happen in interrogation rooms. I would say a vast majority of the time, like 99% of the time that these two guys were in Guantanamo Bay, they sat on the opposite side of cells, mostly just with kids like me. Just 19, 18-year-old, 20-year-old kids walking up and down the blocks, acting like fools. We were the little puppets that ran the whole show, and it wasn't super awful all the time. Most of the time, it was relatively banal. I mean, we were silly and ridiculous, and sometimes it was even funny. Sometimes, and also a lot can be learned in Guantanamo. But I'm not going to sit here and give you a spiel on the positive effects of Guantanamo Bay on people. But there are some, so don't. I'm forgetting where I was going to go with this. Oh, another question. Everybody wants to know, mostly, if I get support. And I absolutely do have support. I have the best in what I'm doing, if people support me. I know that there are people in the world that don't think that what I'm doing is a good thing. And I don't care, because those people suck. I have more support from the people that matter than I could have ever hoped. For instance, I'm a part of an organization called Iraq Veterans Against the War, and this provides me with more support than I think anybody else in the world has. We share a common sickness. We were all ethical creatures who were good people and tried our damnedest to remain good people in awful situations. We are young boys and girls who got stuck in the worst political mess, the biggest fiasco that has made us do the most awful things that we'll regret for the rest of our lives. And nobody else understands that. I will never be able to explain to you my experiences or the experiences of these gentlemen or Guantanamo Bay or the experiences of anybody in the Iraq Veterans Against the War, because it's something you just have to experience. And once you have that illness, it makes you an alien. It makes you unlike everybody else that's free of that. You're free of that. You don't have that, and I envy you. So this is the community that I go to for support. And also I have the support of knowing that what I'm doing is right, because I'm sitting right next to two people that I've spent the last almost coming up on a month of my life with. And it's been one of the weirdest, surreal, awesomest months of my whole life. We were walking in the moors the other day. It was just another crazy scene on the two sides, one story tour. Omar slipped on the ground and I laughed at him, which probably wasn't the best thing to do. But I mean, they're just... This what's happening between us right now is exactly why this whole thing is broken. Since we've been hanging out and riding in the same car, we've just been human beings. We've been talking to one another, we've been laughing, we've been going over information. And that's why this whole thing's broken. It's because there's no room for human beings in these things. You can't do things like this if you're thinking about other people like human beings. You just can't do it. And I want you to take a look around you. This is your community. These are the people that you are all one group. That no matter what divides you can come up with, I've seen so many audiences now, way too many, because this has been a super busy trip. Sorry, by the way, you're getting like the raggly, like last edges of a 30-day like crazy tour around the country, but. This is the group of people. This is our community. I'm hoping you guys are all here because we agree that that's wrong, that this is wrong, and that's essentially all it takes. So look around you and remember that I don't know exactly what it is what we're giving you up here, but just know that what you're doing is right, and make sure that you acknowledge that everybody else here in this audience is part of a cause, and we're a growing community, and this is what it's going to take to get past this, because we're all going to have to acknowledge this is inside the spirit of man. This is one, we are talking about one war in a history, in a culture of war that's gone on for more than 4,000 years now, and it's going to take drastic efforts to end this. And I think the only thing that's going to effectively handle it is coming together like a community. Despite religious and ethnic differences, all that stuff is madness. That doesn't mean anything. And if you got a chance to spend a little time on the opposite side of a cell wall for somebody, with somebody for a long time, you'd understand that no matter what divides you, you're both people, and that's all that matters. So thank you for being here, and keep it up.